Probably all heard the phrase, crime doesn't pay, right? Read the newspaper and you might wonder. Some of the scams and swindles that have been made, particularly some of these guys on Wall Street that have bilked people out of millions of dollars, you might wonder if that's true. We might be able to debate whether or not crime pays. There is no doubt that crime costs. This last week I researched just how much certain crimes cost our society. And the numbers are staggering. Joseph Califano, former U.S. Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare, published a book entitled High Society, How Substance Abuse Ravages America and What to Do About It. These are the things he discovered. Fetal alcohol syndrome, where a pregnant lady abuses alcohol during her pregnancy, costs about $4 million per child through the lifetime of that child for treatment, or $1.9 billion a year. Underage drinking costs $64 billion a year. Emergency room visits for either drug or alcohol abuse, $4 billion a year. Just on college campuses, there's an estimated $80,000 per college just due to alcohol-related vandalism. Our court system spends $30 billion just on alcohol and drug-related crimes. Employers face losses of $28.6 billion a year for alcohol-related injuries on the job. And of course, DWI costs. We pay $230 billion a year due to traffic accidents that are alcohol related. All told, the cost of alcohol and drug abuse on our society exceeds $1 trillion a year. Crime costs. How about gambling? There's an economist at the University of Illinois over here in Urbana. He wrote a book on gambling in America. He calculates that gambling costs society $54 billion a year. Now, I know that it's promoted as, oh, but we're going to raise money for education and we're going to raise money for the government. For every $46 of economic benefit, gambling costs society $289. The cost of incarceration is staggering. One recent article pointed out that one out of 31 Americans are either in prison, on probation, or on parole. The price tag for the system borne by the states was $47 billion in 2008. And now, of course, not all costs of crime can be measured in dollars and cents. According to Dr. Albert Moeller, who's the president of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, the real cost of pornography is measured in broken lives, broken marriages, broken children, and broken dreams. In reality, the true cost is spiritual, for pornography destroys the soul. Those are just a sampling of some of the effects of sin. We've been talking about sin over the last few months. These last several weeks, we've been going through the book of Lamentations and particularly emphasizing the effects of sin. What sin costs. In chapter 1, we saw that sin can cost us our future. Chapter 2 told us that sin can cost us our fellowship with God and with one another. Last week we considered chapter 3, in which Jeremiah points out that sin can cost us our fitness. It can cost us our very health. Because sin and the guilt that comes after the sin affects us physically and psychologically. Now we've come to chapter 4 in the book of Lamentations. And I believe in this chapter we see a loss of fortune because of sin. If you have your Bibles, turn to Lamentations chapter 4. Right from the very beginning of the chapter, this emphasis jumps off the page. Lamentations chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. How the gold has lost its luster. The fine gold has become dull. The sacred gems are scattered at the head of every street. Later on in the chapter, gold is mentioned again in verse 2. Rubies and sapphires are named in verse 7. Verse 5 speaks of delicacies. It refers to luxuries that the people had taken for granted. And what this all has in common is that all of this was lost at the time the Babylonians came in and destroyed Jerusalem. And later on in the chapter, Jeremiah points out that it was all lost because of sin. This was part of the cost, part of the wages of sin. The forfeiture of fortune by sin brings a loss of possession. Put simply, a lifestyle of sin comes with a heavy price tag, quite literally. Those who persist in their own ways eventually lose possession of the valued things that they surround themselves with. Now, sometimes this might happen suddenly through some calamity in which everything is lost. It might be a fire, a flood, a tornado or a hurricane that destroys everything in its path. A lifetime of accumulation can be reduced to rubble in a matter of seconds. Now, I am not suggesting for one minute that every victim of a natural disaster is being judged for their sin. Okay, so don't read that in here. But there are times when there is a connection. Only God knows exactly when those times are, but why take the chance? Why run the risk of experiencing the wrath of God just because we want to hold on to our sin? Because there are times when there is a very definite connection. When we lose a job, when we lose our home and our possessions because we persist in something that we know is wrong. Those stories happen all around us. Our scripture reading out of Zephaniah reflected that truth. When I read that, you might have wondered, what on earth? Did he get the right book? Is that really what we're talking about this morning in church? But listen to what it says down in verse 11 of Zephaniah 1. Wail, you who live in the market district, all your merchants will be wiped out, all who trade in silver will be ruined. What's he talking about here? Economic disaster. At that time I will search Jerusalem with lamps. I will punish those who are complacent, who say the Lord will do nothing, either good or bad. And notice what the punishment entails. Their wealth will be plundered. Their houses demolished. They will build houses but not live in them. They will plant vineyards but not drink the wine. Part of that is coming true even in our own day. There are people that a year ago decided we're going to build this massive new home. The money is there. We've got plenty to bank on, no problem. And there's a lot of empty shells of folks that began to build and couldn't finish. Now, I'm not saying God is judging them because of sin. I'm saying those kinds of things happen. And there are times when God will get our attention that way to wake us up from a sinful lifestyle that we're involved with. And I think verse 18 is crucial there in Zephaniah 1. neither their silver nor their gold will be able to save them on the day of God's wrath. We might have accumulated all of these things, but if we live in sin, if we persist in going our own way and not the way God would have us to go, all of those goods aren't going to do us anything. Now, sometimes people will have their possessions taken from them. Others may be taken from their possessions. Someone whose persistence in sin lands them in prison, they get removed from what they own. What had happened here, because of the people of Jerusalem who persisted in their sin, they were taken away from their city. They were taken away from their homes. They had to go to a foreign land. They were taken away from their possessions. Now that's on a temporary basis. More drastically, someone can be removed permanently from their possessions if their life comes to an end. Jesus taught this in Luke chapter 12, beginning in verse 16. The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry.'" Sounds like the American dream, doesn't it? But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?" And Jesus ended the parable with these words, "This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich toward God." You see, when things become so important to us that they take the place of God, that becomes an idol. And God hates idolatry. And God will not allow something to take His place. And He may have to remove it. We're all familiar with the words of Romans 6:23. The wages of sin is what? Death. Now I remember many years ago learning that death means separation. And one of the wages of sin is that it separates us. It can separate us from our possessions. Maybe in the short term, maybe forever. As I've quoted many times Chuck Swindoll, you never see a hearse pulling a U-Haul. You can't take it with you. And if we devote our lives just to the accumulation of things that we have, what good is it going to do when we face God in eternity? But there's another, subtler price of sin when it comes to our fortune. Sin not only brings a loss of possession where we can lose what we have, but it also brings what I'm calling a loss of preciousness. We lose this sense of value. It doesn't mean to us what it used to. Consider the words of another Old Testament prophet. Haggai chapter 1, verses 5 and 6. "Now this is what the Lord Almighty says. Give careful thought to your ways. You have planted much but have harvested little. You eat but never have enough. You drink but never have your fill. You put on clothes but you're not warm. You earn wages only to put them in a purse with holes in it." I want you to notice what Haggai does not say. He doesn't say you don't have any food. He doesn't say you don't have drink or clothing or shelter or you don't have any money. In fact, he says you have all of those things. You are eating, you are drinking, you are earning money. But what? It doesn't satisfy. even if we still have these things, there's no fulfillment. Whenever I come across this passage in Haggai, I always think of the old Rolling Stones song, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. Grammar may not be right, but you get the idea. You can have all of the things that the world has to offer, and they just don't satisfy. Maybe things that used to. Wow, I used to enjoy this so much, and now it's just a drag. I used to love this activity or these things that I would used to buy, I would accumulate, and I love these things, and now it's just empty. Sin will do that. Sin will do that even in good things. It doesn't have to be bad things. It doesn't have to be wrong activities. Even the good things, we can lose that sense of fulfillment and enjoyment. They lose their value. They lose their preciousness to us. I'm also reminded of the story of John D. Rockefeller about 100 years ago. And at that time, he was one of the wealthiest men in the world. And somebody asked him, Mr. Rockefeller, what does it take? How much does it take to make somebody happy? You know what his answer was? Just a little bit more. It doesn't matter what your bank account is. It won't make you happy. It's just a little bit more. It never satisfies. Sin can so cloud our perspective and limit our enjoyment that the very things that we used to find happiness in just don't satisfy anymore. The music that used to get us through the day just doesn't strike that chord anymore. Those hobbies that helped us break the monotony of our everyday routine, now they just become part of the routine. The things that we treasured just don't seem to matter as much as they used to. Jeremiah talks there in Lamentations about the gold being tarnished. It's still gold, it just doesn't look as good anymore. It doesn't seem to be as valuable. Chuck Swindoll relates a historic event to this very truth. Most of us have read accounts of the sinking of the Titanic. It happened on April 15, 1912, at 2:20 in the morning. By 3 o'clock, the vast ship had hit the bottom. In fact, one account says that it was in the bottom of the ocean in 30 minutes. This was a ship that seemed to be impregnable. Nothing could sink it. On board the Titanic that night were 2,224 people and 1,515 died. I read an account some time ago of an unnamed woman who was one of the few blessed enough to find a seat on one of the lifeboats. As she sat down in the little lifeboat before it went into the North Atlantic, she suddenly remembered something and asked if she could go back to her stateroom just for a moment. She was granted 90 seconds. She jumped out, she ran down the deck of the ship that was already tilting, turned through the gambling room, ignored all of the coins and all the money that were available. She got into her room, reached over her bed. She ignored a couple of diamond rings and other valuable jewelry that was there. She picked up 3 small oranges and ran back to the boat. Now, it seems incredible that 10 minutes before, she would have preferred a crate of oranges to 1 diamond ring. But you see, death had boarded the Titanic. One blast of his awful breath had transformed all values. Instantly, priceless things became worthless, and what seemed to be worthless became priceless. That's what happens when catastrophe strikes. Things you held on to, the things you're going to find your way through life with, suddenly they're empty and insignificant. And the things you considered unimportant, all of a sudden, they're everything. You see, the gold and the precious stones of Jeremiah's day, they had lost their luster. Jeremiah likens the people of God as worth their weight in gold, beginning of chapter 4. They were God's firstborn. God called them my son, my priests, my chosen, my nation, my possession. But now they're worthless. Instead of being gold, they're like cracked pottery. You just throw it away and get something else. They had lost their value. Why? Because of sin. The depth of what the people had lost is seen in verse 10. It's what one commentator calls one of the most gruesome verses in all of Scripture. The hands of compassionate women boiled their own children. They became food because of the destruction of the daughter of my people. It had gotten so bad in the city of Jerusalem, there was cannibalism. The famine was so great that children were cooked just for food. It doesn't get any worse than that. That's the end of it. That's the end of sin. That's where sin leads. And we don't hear about that. We don't hear about that in the TV commercials or the radio ads. We don't hear about that on the billboards that say, oh, this is great. This is the life. This is the way to live. Lamentation says that's not the way to live because this is the end of it. It won't satisfy. It's only when we get ourselves right with God that we're going to enjoy life the way it was meant to be lived. But when we persist on doing it my way, when we persist on being the captain of our ship and no one's going to tell me what to do, including God, we're headed for disaster. And it doesn't matter how much we think we have, how secure we think we are. All of that can change in an instant. God is calling out and saying, don't continue on the path. Now, unfortunately, now as well as then, the real culprits were the ones who knew better and should have influenced the people. Notice in Lamentations 4, verse 13, it happened because of the sins of her prophet and the iniquities of her priests who shed within her the blood of the righteous. Here are the religious leaders. We would call them the preachers, the teachers, the Bible scholars. These are the ones that Jeremiah says, you're to blame. This is happening because of you. Why? Because they soft-pedaled the proclamation of the gospel. They didn't want to offend people, so oh, we're not going to talk about sin. We're not going to talk about judgment. We're not going to talk about the fact that God is holy and He can't stand sin in His presence. No, we want to talk about love and mercy and make everybody feel good. That's nothing new. It was going on back in Jeremiah's day. You get into the book of Jeremiah itself, and he talks about these preachers that sugarcoat the truth. In Jeremiah 6:14, they dress the wound of my people as though it were not serious. Peace, peace, they say, when there is no peace. Try to imagine if you had an accident and you were to go to the hospital and maybe I got a compound fracture. And you've got bones sticking out of the skin. I mean, it's obviously a broken bone, a serious injury, and you're in pain. And you go in and the doctor looks at it and he says, oh, no, you'll be fine. Here, let me get you a Band-Aid. I don't think you would go back to that doctor, would you? And yet, spiritually speaking, that's happening all over. People are dying of spiritual terminal disease. And preachers are dispensing spiritual band-aids. And when calamity strikes, where'd that come from? Where is God in all of this? God is right where He's always been. The question is, where are we? Where have we gone? Well, isn't God full of love and mercy? Sure He is. But God is also holy, and He is just. One day He will right all wrongs. And that's a great comfort if you're in the right. But it's mighty scary if you're not. And for those who are His children, that's going to happen sooner rather than later. You see, God disciplines His children in this life. He punishes the sinners in the next. This is why it may seem like a Christian can't get away with anything. Why is it that people of the world, they're out there, they're flaunting God's laws, they're living in obvious sin, and they're proud of it, and they seem to be doing great. They've got everything that they want. They've got everything I want. Why is that? And boy, the first time I step a little bit out of line, bang, seems like God's hammered down on me. That's right, because that's your Father. And God will set His children back in line. But those who persist in their own way, they've got a whole other story coming. But the message of Lamentations to us today is that the way of the transgressor is hard. The wages of sin are steep. It comes with a big price tag. Sometimes that can be measured in dollars and cents. Sometimes it's measured in things more precious than that. You know, some might question whether we should even spend time talking about material things. I mean, after all, didn't Jesus Himself say that a man's life doesn't consist in the abundance of his possessions? That's true. But it also says that God richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. And there are times in His wise providence when He may have to reach down and take some of those things away. Just like a parent might have to take away a child's toy or a privilege for a time because they persist in their disobedience. Some of us have already paid a steep price with regard to our possessions because of sin. We may have been able to recoup some of that. Maybe it's gone forever. Some of you might have said, you know, I've kind of dodged the bullet, but I warn you, if we maintain our self-centered, sinful ways, it's going to catch up to us eventually. Are we willing to pay the price, whatever that price might entail, for the pleasures of sin for a season? Just so that we can feel good for a short time, is it really worth it? I think you know the answer to that. But there are times in each one of our lives when we get caught up in temptation and it just looks so good. And it feels so good. And you know, God's broad. You know, He'll understand. Yeah. But He's holy. And He loves us too much to let us persist in our own way. It's a whole lot better for us to turn ourselves, for us to recognize where we're falling short and come to God with it, than to have God come to us and say, okay, now I'm going to have to deal with you. So I think it's a good idea for each one of us to take a long, hard look inside. Lord, am I holding on to something that's displeasing to You? Is there some part of my life that I know You're not happy with, but boy, up until now, I just haven't been able to give it up? Now, God has given us the freedom to choose, and we can choose to continue. But He's also said there's consequences. Consider this a warning sign before you get to the drop-off. Stop now before disaster strikes.